Caught Offside presents a World Cup group preview with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney. Group H. What's up, brother?
We're finally here.
Oh, my God. Not a moment too soon.
I'll tell you, I'm just ready to go now. Group H, you shall get short shrift from me.
Oh, come on. No, no, no. That's not fair.
I'm joking.
No, you're not. Because I know how you operate. That's not fair to the people that have waited through all these other group previews because they're a Colombia fan or they're a Japanese fan or a Polish fan or a Senegalese fan. I mean, come on. You don't want to be like that. Be better than that.
Don't tell me how to be. I am exhausted. I'm ready for this tournament to start. People keep throwing up. Like, we're at the point where Mbappe gets injured. I'm like, come on. No more training.
I know.
Hazard comes off after 70 minutes against Costa Rica. I'm like, why isn't he off the field already? Just come on.
Because it's that, like, we're in that weird space in those final tune-up matches where there's this emphasis on making sure that, you know, this is a group that doesn't have much game action together. We've got to make sure that they're a cohesive unit going into these most important games of our lives. But by the same token, you're right. Is the risk worth the reward of just, like developing that little bit of extra chemistry at the risk of maybe getting someone hurt?
I say that. Mbappe got hurt in just an innocuous thing.
No, I know, but the fact that he's out, I don't know.
He'll be fine. He says it's a knock on the ankle. Everything's going to be okay. It's not like a Manuel Lanzini kind of scenario,
right.
Thank God. So
I hate that happened.
I know I've had that injury myself, but it's not that. It's the eve of the biggest thing in your life, and it's,
yeah, I know. But look, for one guy's pain is another guy's pleasure. Like with Mexico, Diego Reyes is out. But all of a sudden, Eric Gutierrez has had his World Cup dream revived. So you got to kind of look at it like that, right?
You're trying to find the silver lining to...
That's what I do. That is what I do. Well, here we go.
Okay.
Let's get it going. We're going to go alphabetically.
With Colombia.
We're going to start with the letter C, which is for Colombia. And we're going to do so with the number one song in Colombia right now called Me Niego by Rake. Why are you looking at me like that?
By Rake.
I guess, I don't know, R-E-I-K. I've been told by Brian Munguia, who works at ESPN in New York, that Rake is actually a Mexican performer. But he's number one right now in Colombia with this little ditty. Yo no provoca tu partida, necesito tu olor, necesito tu calor, necesito verte encima de mi ropa interior. Aún quedan tus retratos, cada rincón de la casa y el silencio me habla de ti. Es que sobra tanto espacio desde que... Not bad.
I don't hate that.
No, it's all right.
It sounds like...
I wonder if he's ever had his song introduced as a little ditty. Probably not.
It's probably disrespectful. He's
Why?
Probably multi-platinum.
Oh, no, he's super famous.
That's like... And here is Michael Jackson with a little ditty called...
Beat It.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does feel a little strange saying that. Let's talk about the Colombians. Fairly impressive performance, I think you'd have to say, at the last World Cup.
Well, they'd never been to a quarterfinal. So.
James Rodriguez exploding onto the scene. Juan Cuadrado exploding onto the scene. These are where a lot of these guys made names for themselves. A little bit of a certain level of new look to them, but a lot of the old guard is still very much a part of this one. And we're going to start with that, the key players. And I'm not going to try to be cute or clever with my first one here. I have a couple guys listed, but James Rodriguez is my first. Look, to a certain extent, forget to a certain extent. They're going to go as he will go. They will go as far as he will take them. 6 goals in 5 games back in the 2014 World Cup. Jose Pekerman is going to give him the freedom, basically, to kind of just roam and play where he wants and just show a trust in him that James certainly validated 4 years ago. He's going to be a handful for opposing defenses. There's no way around it.
I've gone with Falcao.
Oh.
Yep, we all remember what happened at the last World Cup to Falcao. Prior to it, the ACL injury. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah. Don't you remember? I don't want to say it had just happened, but ACL injuries are typically, in soccer, what, like a 9-month recovery
about 9
period?
Rehab.
Wasn't he something like 5 months into it? And he was like, I'm gonna give this
that's
a shot.
Right,
and he went
right.
to train, and they said, come on.
That was the timeline. Like,
we respect what you're doing here, but yeah.
So he's in his 30s, and we obviously remember his time at Man United, and things turned round for him. And 24 goals in all competitions for Falcao again this season. This dog can still hunt, Andrew, and I think he's going to be crucial because he's going to spearhead that attack. And if your creative player, your number 10 is going to be James Rodriguez, the guy who gets a kind of a libero role, as you outlined, mm-hmm. he's going to have to find that relationship together, which they've not always had. And Falcao is going to have to find the goals as well. It can't just be James Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And that's why he's crucial.
Yeah. I had him mentioned as my guy for what needs to happen for them to go on a run. Is they're going to have to get, like you say, some goals out of him. And it's so true, man. Because of his ACL injury, because of his failed spell at Manchester United, we forget how great he was prior to then. When you talked about the great number nines in all of the world, there was a time where like his name was at the top of a lot of people's lists. But since then, what you believe he is has kind of been clouded by those two things. And you forget that he's come back. He's scored over 50 goals combined over the past two seasons. I mean, he's bounced back. I know he's 32 years old, but he's still an excellent player. And if Colombia can get that guy who's motivated, who's playing with a chip on his shoulder of having missed the previous World Cup, who knows if maybe they could have gone further. Brazil weren't great in that game against Colombia. Who knows if Radamel Falcao might have made a difference in that one. So,
but I think
I'm excited about him.
I think he's bounced back not so much from his ACL, but from his general experience in the immediate aftermath of that injury. And like I said, this dog can still hunt. And I think he's fantastic.
By the way, another key player that I did want to mention, kind of transitioning from James. Do you know who James is married to?
No.
A woman by the name of Daniela Ospina. Does that last name sound familiar?
It's a goalkeeping last name.
That is a goalkeeping last name because he's married to David Ospina's sister. David Ospina is an interesting one because he did not cover himself in glory in Colombia's qualifying campaign. He had some really, really bad moments for them during a time where he wasn't playing regularly for Arsenal. I wonder if he enters this tournament as maybe a little bit of a liability at that position. And we just saw in the Champions League what that can mean.
And that's your undoing?
Not necessarily. I view him kind of as a key. Like we've seen what he can do.
He can be a very competent goalkeeper.
Right. But, I guess, yeah, you could lump that in as a potential undoing. I feel like that's maybe a little bit harsh, and that wasn't what I was going to say for that. But he's a key player to me in that, just be good at least. Don't make those kind of mistakes in a World Cup where we know what one goal can mean. Whiffing on crosses, things like that. You can't let that happen. So he's a very interesting one to watch for me. But what about their potential undoing?
Yeah, I think the midfield, it's not an issue for me. It's experienced. Sanchez and Aguilar is probably what's going to be the two holding midfielders. They're going to play a 4-2-3-1. So it'll be Sanchez, Aguilar, and then you'll have Cuadrado, James Rodriguez, and Uribe. I think that's what the three is going to be with Falcao above them.
But again, remember, Rodriguez is allowed to roam.
That is the thing for me. And I honestly feel that they need more from that midfield. And I'm not sure they're going to get it. Personally, I'd play Jefferson Lerma in there because he's a bit more youthful than the other two guys. And he can probably get more done in terms of bridging the gap between that kind of defensive midfield role and the attack. Here's my thing about James wandering, Andrew. Ultimately, he is the focal point of the creative side of the team. And it's kind of like with Brazil right now asking them the question, well, can Coutinho drift that bit further into the midfield and supply that front three? I want James Rodriguez 30 yards from goals. That means the heavy lifting, the supplying of the ball, the winning of the tackles comes from the base of that midfield. And I just question it a little bit. It's a minor concern, but I feel it could be their undoing. Because Rodriguez, over the course of three games in tight succession in tournament football, wandering all over the field, as well as we may have felt that went in 2014, that's not where I want him. I want him further up the field. That's
fair.
That's just a stylistic thing for me.
Yeah.
And he makes it tick, but he needs to be close to the goal. That's what I want. And him drifting off to pick the ball up from, we'll say, like Davinson Sanchez or someone like that, that sounds bad. Now, I'm not saying that will happen necessarily, but I think the heavy lifting, the water carrying, as they used to describe Deschamps, as Zidane used to describe Deschamps, that's what needs to happen from Sanchez and Aguilar, who I expect that'll be the two anyway.
For me, this is a little bit more abstract, and you can help me decipher this. Because, I don't know, I look at Colombia and I look at them as a good team, definitely. I believe that they'll get out of this group. I believe that they'll win this group. But tell me what you make of this. During qualifying, here's how Colombia fared against what I would consider to be the most elite competition in CONMEBOL. Brazil, Uruguay, Argentina, and even though they've missed out on qualifying, if you look at what Chile were during that period, back-to-back Copa America champions, got to a final of the Confederations Cup. I include Chile among those four. So that's eight matches for Colombia. They won none of them, lost four, and drew four. Then in their last Copa America in the U.S., they did fairly well, advanced to the semis, but their wins in that tournament were against the U.S., Paraguay, and Peru on penalties. They lost a group game to Costa Rica, and they lost their semifinal to Chile. So now they've been slotted into a group that doesn't really have much of a weak link. This is a pretty solid group top to bottom. Obviously, the World Cup, if they get out of the group, you know, they're going to be playing top-notch competition. I have them facing England. It'll be probably either England or Belgium for them in the round of 16. I'm putting friendlies aside. I'm just talking about in recent games of true consequence. For whatever reason, they have not played well against high quality opponents, and I wonder if that's an aberration, or I wonder if there's some kind of issue here for them with that coming into this tournament.
I advance on that a little bit as well, and we talk about how good James Rodriguez is, and we talk about Falcao and Cuadrado. Andrew, 21 goals in 18 World Cup qualifiers. They only got into Russia by a point.
And do you remember how it happened? The conversation with Falcao and I forget who it was from Peru, where they're just standing there basically saying, look, let's all just stop. And they did, and the game just kind of ended.
Because the draw was good enough
for
both.
Right, it was good enough for both.
You know our friend, our dear friend, one of the biggest proponents of this podcast in its early days, and still now even, Mr. Tom Fitzgerald, a icon of sports, of soccer in New York City.
According to him, maybe.
Nah, he's a guy, he's all in. He currently works for Copa 90, one of them.
He's the best. This podcast wouldn't exist without him.
He's a great guy. I love him to bits. I miss time when I'm not with him, I think about him. He's an Irish American, there's no question, but he's really Colombian. He's married to his lovely Colombian wife. I love their family. He's all in on Colombia. And he constantly asked me why on this podcast I trashed them. Andrew.
Do you?
Andrew, it's a gut thing. It's a visual thing. It's also what we've just outlined in qualifying and even in the Copa America. I find them not good to watch. I don't enjoy them that much. I didn't even enjoy 2014 that much.
Thomas had the goal at the tournament.
It was good. And he's always asking me, you know, why are you so down on my boy James? You know, I mean, Fitz and James do not look alike. There's no way that they are boys in any sense of a commonality. This team flatters to deceive for me is the kindest way I can put it.
Wow.
I don't know what they're missing because on paper, I like what I see. God, and Colombian fans are so passionate. They're going to absolutely crush me. They're going to say, I don't know what I'm talking about. They're actually defensively, especially in the center of that defense, they're going to be fairly stingy. I like the way they set up. Everything I see on paper seems good to me, but they don't do it for me. They do not do it for me.
You mentioned the center of their defense. That is my X factor here, the center back pairing. Davinson Sanchez had a really, really good first season at Tottenham, really allowed them to limit the damage of losing Alderweireld for as long as he was out with his injury. Davinson Sanchez actually turns 22 today. Happy birthday to him. Very young, though. The guy next to him is expected to be Yerry Mina,
who
of Barcelona.
Has not seen much time this season, but is highly rated.
Well, he's only 23 years old. He joined Barcelona in January from Brazilian side Palmeiras. and played in just 6 games in all competitions since joining Barcelona. That's a lot. A 22-year-old in Davinson Sanchez and a 23-year-old who barely has played over the last several months, that's a lot riding on those two guys at a really important position in the most important set of matches in their life.
I would go as far as to say that you're right in terms of experience, but like if you look at, I mean, it's been mainly highlights from Palmeiras that we've seen of Mina. He's a beast. He's a brilliant defender, or he seems to be.
There's been some talk of whether or not he'll actually stay with Barcelona because there's a lot of competition at the place where he's going to be playing. There's been some talk maybe of Fenerbahce moving in.
Well, I would hope they'd stick it out with him because from the limited highlights I saw at Palmeiras, he was fantastic. Yeah, they're not ball-playing centre-backs either, really, are they? Is Davinson Sanchez a ball-playing centre-back?
I mean, I've seen him... Look, I don't know that he's at a point yet where he can ping a ball like some centre-halves that you see, but what was the game for Spurs? The ball that he played down the sideline?
Oh, you're right.
Was that in the FA Cup semi-final?
That was a superb ball that put... Who was it he put away? Eriksen.
Eriksen, who then fed Dele Alli in front.
Yeah, it was like a 40-yard pass from the right fullback position.
Right, and I remember you were criticizing, who was it, Phil Neville, who thought that maybe he didn't do that on purpose? Who was commentating
on
the match?
No, it was Stu Holden.
Oh,
Stu Holden said it was a speculative ball. Speculative, Stu.
That's right, it was the...
Okay, so I take that back. What I'm looking for here, Andrew, is a link between, you know, the centre-halves are going to get on the ball, they're going to set the play up, and how's it going to work? Because like I said, I want Rodriguez further up the field. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering how that's going to work. But I don't worry about their age so much.
Okay.
Although you've put concerns on my mind.
Look, you're right. I mean, there's players younger than that who are expected to play a key... Look, if the U.S. had qualified, their best player was going to be a teenager. So,
yeah.
I hear you.
I've got from a kind of an access of attacking up front. So on the flanks or in the wider positions, Uribe and Cuadrado, they're going to be supplying a lot for Falcao. And the balls, the deliveries... The through balls, everything is going to have to be perfect from them. Also, the James Falcao combo. Like, there's a danger with James that he sees himself as putting this team on his back and doing a lot of the work. As James goes, Falcao may go as well. And he has to see himself as a creative force and somebody who's going to put Falcao through. So those two combinations up front are going to kind of set the tone for them attacking-wise. And I think that's their X factor. If those two components click... Look, I like this team.
You mentioned their passionate fan base. I remember in the last World Cup, I was at the old beer garden in Astoria, in Queens, and they were playing. And like Astoria is known for a Greek population, an Italian population, mainly Greek though. But JJ, the Colombian fans just like took over. I could not believe how many, and they're all wearing the yellow jerseys. They're all singing. They were so into it. They add a fun element to whatever tournament they're in.
They regularly remind New York City during World Cups how beautiful the people they are, mm-hmm, and how much they love to party. And look, I don't want to be too down on their team, but I had to get that off my chest.
Okay.
I hope you
feel better.
They always flatter to deceive. And
what do you mean always? I think that they were generally pleased with how they did in the last tournament.
No, it was good. It was a record for them. Yeah. They'd never been to the quarterfinal. So maybe I should just shut up.
Okay.
I'll shut up.
That's fine with me. That's Colombia. We move on now as we go through, like I said, alphabetically. This is not an indication of how I believe they will finish. Japan, number one in Japan right now, is a song called Teacher Teacher by AKB48. That is Japan.
Cultural icon or cultural professor that you are. Delineate for me the differences between K-pop and what we just heard there.
I don't think I'm in a position to be able to do that. One thing that I find very odd are these nations that don't speak English that demand to use English in their music. Why do they do that?
That they randomly insert English words.
Yeah, a lot of Japanese, teacher, teacher, Japanese, I don't know.
Yeah, like Gangnam Style.
Right. Yeah,
I think
that
that's just the influence of Western culture.
It must be. I guess living in Western culture, it's hard to see that because it's not a thing we would really do.
Well, no, we wouldn't really sing a song and then for the chorus sing it in like.
Well, you know what? I'm trying to think now of some examples. Like, why am I doing this? Like Ricky Martin with his famous song, you know, singing English, 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 La Vida Loca, English, English, English.
Yeah.
So maybe you know, Spanish-speaking people would be like, well, that's nice of them to throw in. But then again, he's of that heritage.
Yeah, but but I listen to whole Sigur Rós albums. Don't know what they're saying. Yeah. Don't know what they're singing about. It sounds great, though. So maybe it's not that weird.
No, I'm not saying it sounds bad. I just find it, like, it's different.
Yeah,
it is. All of a sudden they just, I believe that we'll hear that again coming up later amongst our songs.
Why?
Because I think I listened to all these ahead of time. I think it's going to happen again.
Okay.
There's no other English-speaking countries this group.
I thought Teacher Teacher was number one somewhere else.
No.
It's number one in Poland.
And in classrooms everywhere. Let's see. Key players for Japan. Can I go first?
I mean, you're going to just say the same thing as me.
No, I don't think I am, actually.
Ooh.
I don't think I am. I went with Maya Yoshida.
Okay.
Obviously, Premier League fans will be familiar with his work at Southampton. Look, here's the thing. I said before when we were talking about Colombia that a potential danger for them is that this is a pretty even group from top to bottom. However, if there is a bottom, Japan are probably occupying that spot. And this is a group with opponents of Japan that feature names like Lewandowski, Mane, James, Falcao. There are some lethal goal scorers in this group. Japan are going to have to be able to defend if they're going to want to do anything in this tournament. And Yoshida is their most experienced defender. So I think a lot is going to fall on him. And fortunately, because he was not very good for them last time around, but he even spoke about that and talked about how much he's grown from playing with Southampton. He's played along some and behind some really good defensive talent at that Southampton club that have moved on and gone to other clubs. So he's learned quite a bit. And I think he's become a regular first teamer for them. I think he enters this tournament as a very good central defender, and he's going to have to be for Japan to pick up some points here.
Yeah, the fulcrum of their creative power is Shinji Kagawa for me. 91 games and 29 goals. That's pretty impressive. 29 years of age, vastly experienced, couldn't look beyond him because at some point they're going to have to try and score some goals, and I just see him as being key for them.
Yeah. There's another guy who could go down as a key player. I think a lot of Japanese fans would view him as that. I put him as a guy for what's going to have to happen for them to go on a run, and I'm looking at Keisuke Honda. He was supposed to be one of the big Japanese exports. He went to AC Milan. It was supposed to be a huge move, and
it just didn't click.
It was kind of disappointing. Now he's in Mexico with Pachuca, where he's reclaimed some of his form, 10 goals and 7 assists in 29 matches. You wonder if him making that move, could that serve as sort of a just-in-time confidence boost? He's playing in more games. He's contributing. Will he be more comfortable leading for his national team than he was for a club side? Maybe these are guys that he's more accustomed to playing with, that he's known for. I don't know exactly, but you get the sense that he's going to have to. He's their leader. I mean, he's 32 years old?
Yeah, which is not terribly old. And, you know, he showed flashes where you're like, I get why anybody would want him in their side. And it didn't really work at Milan. And look, he's still playing at a good level, so it's not like he's fallen off the face of the earth completely. It'd be interesting to see. I've put down to start the tournament after, like, you got to say, I know it's a friendly, but I'm grasping around for straws for Japan a little bit here. But they beat Paraguay 4-2. I think that's a good result. There were some goals in that. Colombia may be too much for them, and a run is really unlikely, but maybe that gives them a bit of a confidence boost coming into this. I know what they're undoing is anyway.
What do you have?
Again, it's not the first time we've seen this when we've been doing our group previews. The Japanese FA sack manager, Vahid Halasadzic, right before the tournament and left Akira Nishino with 2 months to figure it all out.
Yeah.
And no friendlies. They only had friendlies now in May. Just a month past. And it seems... I don't know why you do that. You're not helping the team. I know you mightn't be...
Well, you say that. I actually had that
same thing. Do international teams get a bounce from a manager being sacked like that?
That's a very good question. Here's the thing. I actually had that as my my X factor for kind of the reason that you're saying right now in terms of manager bounce. It's more than just, like, they didn't sack him for nothing, for no reason. They weren't playing very well. They had a couple friendlies where, and again, it was friendlies, but they lost to Brazil and Belgium, which you could forgive them for defeats like that. But the same couldn't be said this past March when they fell to Ukraine. They could only draw with Mali. These were some poor results. And then I think maybe even bigger than that, you can survive poor results on their own. But what you can't survive are that with the combination of having a falling out with your better players. Now, he dropped guys like Shinji Okazaki, Honda, Kagawa. He dropped them late last year in an international break when they lost those games to Brazil and Belgium. And I don't know if he won those guys back. And when you've lost arguably your three best players, that is a problem. And you better know what you're doing, and you better pick up some results, even in friendlies, if you're going to do something like that, and if you're going to not have those guys on your side. So I think it almost left the Japanese FA in some ways with no choice. You can take your chances. I mean, you say, okay, let's make the move 2 months before the World Cup starts. You can take the risk. These guys don't really like him. We're not playing that well, but the timing's bad. Let's just see what happens. You can go that route, but I think Japan were proactive and said, you know what, let's not wait. We see a problem here. Let's fix this now. 2 months could be enough. We'll get the team in. He'll pick his squad. And maybe that's enough time to figure it out. And having said that, because it didn't work at first, Akira Nishino comes in, and they lost to Ghana, and they lost to Switzerland, so it didn't get off to a good start. But earlier today, they played Paraguay, and they actually won 4-2.
That's what I was talking about there. That might give them a little bit of a bounce going into the tournament. Scoring 4 goals is pretty great.
Yeah.
But...
You're right. It was a risky move. There's no question about it.
It could be a point where it galvanizes the team together, brings them together. I don't know. It's just so hard to know in international football about the manager bounce.
That is true. Like, we talk about that all the time. I don't know if it works the same way.
It might do.
For
the
a
fact
national
that
team.
He alienated the previous manager, alienated like the key guys, the veterans. You know, anything that makes them feel that bit better about going into the tournament,
right?
You know,
and
it might work.
Nishino's not just some guy. He won the 2008 Asian Champions League with Osaka.
Right. So he's a relatively experienced manager.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And he had been the technical director, I believe, and he just moved into the managerial role. But that's an X factor for me because I just don't – it can go either way. I don't really know. We'll have to wait and see. You got anything else on Japan?
No, I think their X factor might be Okazaki, though. 7 goals, 4 assists for Leicester is not going to blow you away.
I love the way he plays, though. Tireless.
Smile on his face.
Yeah.
Like, I know he'll never stop running, and he has a knack of, you know, finding himself in the right position. I'll tell you, he's going to be busy in this tournament. He always looks like the most exhausted man when he's coming off the field.
Yeah.
I actually love him as a player. I really do.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe he can have a good tournament. 32 now, so it's now or never.
Last hurrah, potentially. We move on now from Japan to Poland. Their number one song is called Wonderland by C. Bool. Strings in there. I'm a sucker for that, I gotta say. That's a cool sound.
You probably love Bittersweet Symphony by The Verve. It's probably one of your favorite
it's
songs.
It's not one of my favorites necessarily.
The strings come in.
I didn't say I love every single song that has strings in them, but it's a sound that I just kind of enjoy. That was another one, though. Like, that wasn't in Polish. I understood every word. Right?
Amazing. other nations can speak English. Andrew's eyes to the world are opened.
But wouldn't it be... But I think that that's culturally appropriate of me to feel that way. Like, I don't expect all these other countries to speak to speak their music in my language. You know? Like, I think that that's right. Be Polish. Do it in Polish.
Andrew gives green light for Poles to be Polish. Love it.
Let's see. The key players, once again, like with Colombia.
Man, we are really exhausted, aren't we? We're getting to the end of it where you are allowing Polish people to be Polish now on the podcast.
No allowance about it. I'm just saying. Like, and I actually kind of enjoy that song. Like, if you listen to more of it, I don't know. I kind of like the sound of it there.
Andrew Gundling's message to Poland. Hey, guys, you be you.
Because that's what's cool. My key player, I'm not gonna mess around, all right? It's Robert Lewandowski. Scored 16 of Poland's 28 goals in qualifying. Well over half. That was tops in UEFA qualifying. 40-plus goals in three straight seasons in all competitions. He's great. He's a great player. I don't really have a ton more to say about him.
I've gone with Piotr Zielinski from Napoli, who's going to sit in behind Lewandowski and has a lot of responsibility on his shoulders. And look, Liverpool have been chasing this guy and linked with him since, I don't know, probably since Klopp took over. He's a young player, bright future ahead of him, and there is a lot of pressure on his shoulders now because he is basically going to be the man who can, or one of the men who's going to be able to dictate whether Lewandowski can do it on the big stage. And this does seem like a group. I'm not bowled over by this Polish side. Do you know what I mean? It's solid. It's functional. You know a lot of the names. You feel like they're gonna be okay. But it feels like a group for them that they could make hay in, and they should at least come out of.
They quietly had a pretty successful Euro campaign, getting to the. I mean, their penalties away against Portugal from a semifinal appearance.
They were unlucky.
Yeah. So I think they're probably feeling somewhat good about themselves. I mean, they won their qualifying group. Another guy who I wanted to mention here is Kamil Glik.
Right.
30-year-old Monaco defender. He looked like he was dead set to miss this tournament with a shoulder injury that he suffered in training. The president of Poland's Football Federation tweeted out just a week ago that Glik had no chance of taking part. But then he went back to Monaco, took a physical with the club, and they cleared him to return. This was the statement, quote, after tests today, that was yesterday, Monday, and taking into account a very favorable development, Monaco has authorized Kamil Glik to rejoin the Poland World Cup squad. What an incredible boost. Lewandowski called him the backbone of their defense. His return is massive for them.
That's huge for them. It really is. And you can see a spine developing down the team with him in it.
Yeah.
That's huge. It really is.
For them to go on a run.
Not much has to happen.
Oh my.
Well, look, it's an open group. It's a group you can... If they can get things going offensively and Lewandowski can find his form, Andrew, they can blast their way through this.
Yeah, this group is really weird like that. There's three teams where it's like, for me, it's flip a coin territory. I'm looking at Arkadiusz Milik, one of my favorite names in the sport. I love saying that name.
Arkadiusz.
Just flows, yeah. Napoli striker, he has underachieved a little bit at the club because injuries have kind of stunted his growth. Now, he was kind of one of the breakout performers at European Championships. He's only 24, still viewed, I guess, as a fairly promising young player. I don't know if he'll start for Poland in this tournament, but I believe he'll see time as a sub. And now being what I believe is up to full health, I'm curious to see how he performs with so much still to prove, because I don't think Napoli feel like they got quite what they paid for.
Also, Napoli fairly loaded at the front spot, so I mean, it'd be difficult to make your way into that team. I've got some things for their undoing potentially. Okay. Just having a look now. Again, I'm not 100% certain how they're going to line out. I think it's going to be a 4-2-3-1. Looking at some of their midfield personnel, Blazikowski, not that many games for Wolfsburg at club level this season. Krakowiak, who's going to have to do a lot of screening, winning the ball. He's a good player, But an up and down season in a relegated side in England is...
I didn't think he had that good of a season.
Mm.
I don't think... Honestly, I don't think a whole lot of them.
You don't. Yeah. Grzycki, who could start as well, potentially for them on the left-hand side of that three in behind Lewandowski. I mean, he was in a Hull side in the championship that finished 18th, I think. Linetti, the youngest player, who is a Sampdoria regular, he could be key in that midfield because there's a lot of names you know and you think, oh, yeah, they'll be okay there. But when you kind of peel back...
Just because you know a name doesn't always necessarily mean that that guy's really good.
Yeah, and I don't know. It just seems a little bit... When you go back from behind Lewandowski and Zielinski, that midfield seems a little bit... What's the word? Turgid?
Well, Linetti...
Functional?
Linetti is actually my X factor. Like you say, 23-year-old attacking midfielder at Sampdoria. I don't know exactly what he'll do in this tournament, but I kind of view him almost as the key to being able to unlock Lewandowski, as the guy who can link up the midfield to the attack. Because Lewandowski, for whatever good Poland did at the European Championships, Lewandowski was kind of average.
Mm.
For them to take a step forward at the World Cup, he can't be. And somebody's going to have to get him involved. So I'm kind of looking at Linetti as a guy... who could be that person.
And he could line up deeper in that midfield as well and be a kind of tempo setter and a creative force there, whereas Krakowiak could be the guy who does the dirty work, if indeed he can. Yeah. Although you've just crushed him.
No, I didn't crush him. I don't know.
No,
look, if we were talking about... We're talking about Poland, and he's a name that we recognize because he plays in the Premier League, so he's somebody you'll mention. But if we were doing a Premier League podcast right now and his name came up and we were talking about West Brom,
yeah,
what would we wouldn't be talking glowingly about him.
Do you remember when he came into the club, we were like, that's a good actual signing for them, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. Do you have an X factor here?
The form of Lewandowski is just basically what I put down, because I think goals in this group and Poland could find their way out of it, and you never know.
He's such a great player. Oddly enough, there's like all this talk about his future at Bayern. Is it in question? I don't know.
Well, he's getting to the age where it's not so much... It's like, does he want to move? Does he want to test himself at another level? Because he's always been rumors around him because he's so consistently good. And
another level? You're at Bayern Munich.
I know, but...
Where are you going from there?
Do you know how many players want to, before they finish out, have played in England or Spain?
Yeah.
Like, just lots. To have that on their list, on their resume, and to test themselves in those leagues. That's just a fact.
Spain, it seems like more so right now. Everybody wants to play at Barcelona and Real Madrid. That's it.
Yeah, but England, don't forget, the money that's floating around England, it's very tempting.
Well, of those money sides, who's the... I mean, Manchester City aren't... Like, that's the team, I would think. I haven't heard anything really... I guess United.
I heard talk of United, but I don't even know how that'd work. Let's not get into that.
Yeah.
That's for another podcast.
It certainly is. That's it for Poland, and we move on now to the final side in this group. Senegal, number one song is called Amongst the Avis from T.O.B.I. Don't be confused, don't be caught up when it's hip-hop curfew. Rapper techno fire team, gonna bash it for real. Want to rise, now you wonder what my life is supposed to be. I fight hard to be what I'm supposed to be. Shine like a diamond, like star. Little Senegalese hip hop.
I like that, man, because he's like
kind of
wondering
a cool beat.
The beat's good.
Yeah,
he's wondering what his life's going to be. You know,
I know.
But like, he's shining like a diamond, which is important for him, I feel. Because like,
for all of us,
yeah, you got to shine bright like a diamond.
So you went there,
yeah, but so did he.
Senegal key players. Who do you got?
Koulibaly, obviously in the center, the defense. Idrissa Gueye, who. I don't know. I like him a lot as a player, and unfortunately, what's going on at the club isn't entirely his fault. It's been a season where I predicted he would do much better, but there we go. Sadio Mane, obviously, up front. Jeffrey Sacco, they're kind of, I won't say loaded, but sneakily...
They're good.
Sneakily interesting.
No, Senegal is good. Koulibaly was my guy as well from Napoli. 6'5", nearly 200 pounds. He's probably one of the more imposing defenders in this tournament. He's been excellent for Napoli. He's been on the radar of some prominent clubs throughout Europe. Chelsea are said to be very interested in him. Napoli, though, from what I was reading, they're not going to make it easy. I saw one report from RAI Sport that they've placed a price tag of over £100 million on him.
Wow.
If that is true, it speaks to how good he is. For them to go on a run...
Early doors upset Poland that
there
game.
There we go.
Seriously, though, they are getting a... If we were to do it like this, say you're the Senegal manager and you're identifying the threats in the group. No disrespect to Japan. You park them for a second and you look at... You've got Colombia and Poland.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way that their manager, Sisi, isn't former captain as well, isn't telling them the story of when we played France in 2002. There's just no way. He's going to send them in with absolutely no fear. He says, guys, you win your opening game in a tournament and that sets you on a run. And they're going to be very aware of that. And that's all they need to know. That's the focus. It's cup final. First game, Poland versus Senegal, sets the tone for the group.
I think really highly of them. But I just wonder, again, I don't quite, like what I was saying with Colombia, a little bit of that applies. Their form recently, they've just been erratic. Now, they beat Korea yesterday, which is good, but this is a team that has somewhat recently, they've got draws with Luxembourg, Bosnia, and Uzbekistan.
A 1-1 draw with Uzbekistan. The Luxembourg one is almost unforgivable in international terms.
Weird. Like I look at this Senegal team, I really think they're good. I don't want to tip my hand, but like I really think that they're good, if you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, you're treading the same line as me with their undoing in that does Alois Cisse know his how he wants to formulate that attack, which I don't want to go into because I'm going to go into it in the X Factor.
Okay. But, well, let's go into that now if you want.
All right.
What do you think?
Well, how does he use the players, like the abundance of talent that he's got available to him? So does he play specifically Sadio Mane centrally, like as a number 10, which has happened in the past in behind? Does he play a little bit wider in a 4-1-4-1, which he has used before, which I feel is okay. Could Ismaïla Sarr from Rennes, the young player, be on one side? Could you put Sané on the other and have them in a fluid attacking three where you swap sides? How exactly are you using your best player? And so I went back and I looked at different formations that they used in qualifying and different formations that they used in friendlies. I don't think the manager knows yet. And that for me is... It was interesting. I read an article on StatsBomb, which is a very
good website that you frequent.
You know me and stats. The thought of going on StatsBomb hurts me. But our good friend Michael Goodman posted, because he's the editor there, posted an interesting article.
A great follow on Twitter.
Yeah, really good. And one of the things he posted, that one of the people on StatsBomb posted about Senegal, was that Mane will play centrally, will also drop deeper to pick up the ball and make runs from deep, which is really kind of interesting to me. And he could be a deeper lying threat coming from deep with the ball or running onto the ball. So, I don't know. I think the X factor is if Cisse can get this right, then that attack explodes.
You know why I love Sadio Mane? Because I've always found watching him, even prior to joining Liverpool, even with Southampton, but certainly still with Liverpool as well, for better or for worse, I feel like he's just always a part of the action. He wants the ball.
Sometimes he doesn't finish when you want him to, but
certainly. And I've seen even bad tackles. It just feels like whenever something of note or of interest happens in a game that he's involved with, I feel like oftentimes he's a part of the action. I like guys like that who just, all out embrace it.
He's high intensity, and you just got to find a way to use that. And that's the key for them. Because can you imagine him? Like, you can see him, like you said, crashing into a tackle, winning the ball, but also the blistering pace he brings to that attack. But again, I don't see the pattern here for Cisse. I'm looking at a friendly game from, I think, a couple of months back, and they played 4-4-2. With Sarr on the right and Mane up front, almost as a kind of a up front in a two with Diafra Sakho. I don't think that's the best way to use them either. It's it's weird.
Yeah. My X factor is a guy that you actually mentioned already, Idrissa Gueye. The Everton man, he's not talked about, it seems, all that much, but quietly, he's done a really good job for them in that defensive midfield role. Only Wilfred Ndidi had more successful tackles than Idrissa Gueye did last season. He had 117 of them. Here's what Steven Pienaar said about him. Idrissa is important to the team. If you look around at other clubs, they have one of those players like him. Chelsea have N'Golo Kante. Tottenham have Moussa Dembele, Eric Dier, Victor Wanyama. City have Fernandinho, who can play, they can all play at that position. They're all important players that a lot of people don't see the work they do. For me, Idrissa is vital because he does the dirty work, but is also good on the ball. You need a link between attack and defense, and he is that guy.
What have we been talking about for a ton of these teams? Exactly that player. How important is that role? It's huge.
Oh, yeah.
And you identified it with Ndidi for Nigeria as well. So he could be so key in terms of how they do in this. It's huge.
I totally agree. I mean, because he's going to be, if Steven Pienaar is comparing him to N'Golo Kante, it means he's part-time defender, part-time attacker. You know,
breaking up attacks, launching attacks, the whole thing.
Yeah. And you're right. In what was kind of a down year for Everton, there weren't many bright spots to talk about, and so we rarely ever did. But he probably was one, maybe the only one. And maybe he deserved a little more credit than we gave him throughout the year, because I don't remember talking about him all that much. But he's a good player, and a very young player, too.
Yeah, and what was happening up the field probably dictated a lot of what happened to him, and that the ball was going up, and they weren't scoring goals, they weren't particularly good in attack. And I remember the game, one of the few bright sparks in the season, away at Man City. I thought he was really good that day.
Yeah. So there you go. That's our look at Senegal. Before we get to your... Do you want to do Blast from the Past first, or do you want to do predictions first?
We got a bit of a mailbag.
Or that.
Quick mailbag at Jersey Jonathan. This is the group to watch if you're a total soccer wonk. Every game should be relatively even, and any team is capable of finishing first and or making quarterfinal.
Well, yes, any team... Japan getting to the quarterfinal would really surprise me. Like, maybe if Japan were to get out of the group, fine, that's one thing. But do you see them beating, it would be most likely either England or Belgium?
No.
I don't know. That seems like a tall order.
Stretching it a little bit. Steve in Cleveland. What's JJ's issue with James? Colombia went on a run guided by him at 14, but JJ never seemed impressed by him. A world-class game changer, what's up? Well, I did. I think I said that. I made a comment.
When was this? I don't remember you like really letting into him.
No. Do you remember what I said about when he was taken off by Upamecano when Bayern Munich needed a goal in the Bernabeu, and James had just come close?
Okay.
And I may have used terms like flatter to deceive, not like...
All terms that you used again tonight about Colombia. Boy, you're not making many friends.
No. I'm going to get crushed. Yeah,
you know what, though? It's not about friendship. All right? It's about winning.
Hey, listen, they'll prove me wrong. No doubt about it. And then everyone will just email, oh, you don't know what you're talking about.
That it for mailbag for tonight?
Yeah, that's just the two for this.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do a little blast from the past, shall we? I got the wheel here. Let's give it a spin. Slowing and up. The team that we were just with, Senegal.
Papa Bubba Diop's winner against the reigning champions, France, in 2002, proving my theory that the first game is always the most important.
And it was Dav who put El Hadjouf away, and they've got two striding up in the centre here. Boubajop is there! Oh, and Boubajop is there! And Senegal have scored the first goal of the 2002 World Cup! After half an hour's play, Papa Boubajop! Oh, just look at this celebration!
That was amazing, because obviously France were the defending world champions, and I think a lot of people thought that they had the potential to repeat.
Well, they'd won the European Championships in 2000, so it was going for the three, and Zidane came in with a hamstring injury, never looked fit, nothing went right for them really in that tournament, but lots went right for Senegal, and...
Just listen. I mean, remember, El Hadj Diouf was one of those guys who came out of that tournament.
African Player of the Year, 2002.
Didn't quite go the way he thought.
No,
it would.
We signed him.
Oh, sure did.
We signed him. Yeah. Ask Stephen Gerrard, Jamie Carragher about El Hadj Diouf.
Yeah, I remember we talked about that on a previous podcast, right?
Yeah, we did. It's it wasn't good. Yeah, he's probably one of the became a hate figure.
Yeah,
yeah, for Celtic fans, and for Liverpool fans alike.
But yeah, I remember that game really well to kick off that 2002 tournament.
And Cissé the current manager
was the
captain then.
Yeah.
So
it's funny with that goal, that Papa Boubadia, another awesome name. Boy, what a good name. But it's funny with that one. He scores, and that's what we remember. But when you go back and watch the highlight, he kind of does all he can to not score.
Oh, my God, he falls over. He scuffed his shot.
But his initial shot, he probably should have been able to just put that in. But, like, it was Fabian Barthez in net, right? Kicks it right at him. He's got the whole net to work with, and it looks like he's aiming for the keeper more than he's aiming for the net. Fortunately, there was a rebound that came right back to him
while he was on the ground. Yeah.
And he's able to hammer it home, and they win 1-0. Really memorable stuff.
Yeah, and it was actually, you know, it was a decent game. France, Trezeguet hit the post early. Henri had a real good chance. One of those, and France just, they melted after that.
So there you go. That is our final blast from the past. We should say that we have a World Cup, general World Cup podcast coming for you as well on Wednesday, midday-ish, where they're not blasts from the past. They kind of are. We've solicited all of you for your first World Cup memory, your first indelible memory from the World Cup, and we got so many great responses, way too many to go through. So we kind of just plucked out, like 6 or 7?
I took 6 or 7, got a bit of audio for them.
Yeah, so we'll go back and relive some of those. But make sure you download that podcast because it's kind of just like all the overarching questions that your friends ask you, you know, what player's going to break out? What's like the under-the-radar team? Yeah. Stuff like that. We'll go through all that stuff. So you'll feel super prepared if you don't already. You ready to make predictions for this group?
I am, actually.
I had a harder time with this group than any other.
Really?
Yeah, the only other time that I remember really struggling was when I was trying to decide between Morocco and Portugal. That was difficult. Also, Nigeria and Croatia I had a hard time deciding with. But the reason that I had such a hard time with this group, all the other groups, there was always like one team where I knew I could at least pen them in. I can't do that in this group. There's Japan I have not going through, and then Poland, Senegal, Colombia, I feel like just take 3 coins, flip them in the air, and pick 2. I know that's not like, you know, hard nose analysis, but I'll tell you, in the end, I have Colombia winning the group, and I have Senegal going in ahead of Poland.
Wow.
Yeah.
I really struggled with this. So what I did was I looked at the SPI according to 538, our dear friends. Colombia, 68.8%. Poland, 54.8%. Japan, 43%. Senegal, 33.4%.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so what, did you just follow that?
Well, I did, but I'm going Colombia, Senegal, and Poland missing out. And I don't feel great about doing that because, like what I've said already, but Senegal, you know, that kind of attack that they have there and the base of their midfield, they have enough to cause these teams a problem. All depends.
They certainly do.
All depends on the first.
It's going to be really, really tight. I hope people, like more than the other groups even, don't hold us to this group's prediction specifically. Is just, I don't feel good. There's no combination of teams that I would really, truly feel good about. But if Colombia do win, and I have England finishing second in their group, that is a round of 16 matchup that I'm really interested in.
Like, how has the SPI got to advance Japan with a higher percentage than Senegal?
That really surprises me.
Yeah, but I'm just reading it for you guys. I don't know. It's one of those where, like the fella said, it's for the soccer wonk. They're going to really enjoy it.
We are done. Look at the relief on your face.
It's not relief. It's just...
No, this was tough. You can feel relief. This was a lot of work. I'm glad we did it. It was fun.
I feel
so ready. I'm so, like, really, truly excited now for this tournament to start.
And a lot of people said a lot of nice things. You know, it was genuinely, you know, it was touching that you listened to us blather on and try and predict things that, you know, we can't be sure of.
No.
Carter,
Lovely message. Gentlemen, thanks so much for the pods. Can't remember the last one I missed. I'll be in NYC in July and would like to say thanks by buying you both a drink.
Oh, yeah.
Tell me your favorite drinks and pub. There will be one waiting for you there after July 17th. Well done, boys. Well done indeed.
What does that mean? They're just going to, like, there's going to be, like how, you know, on Passover, you kind of keep a seat open for Elijah and there's just a cup of wine there. And like, we're going to tell them a bar. They're going to just keep two stools with beer and they'll just sit there until we're ready.
No, but there's a lot of bars in NYC where you can order for a friend and they write it up on the chalkboard that is paid for it, and you come in with a valid New York ID and you get the drink.
Oh, that is too nice, man. Yeah.
John Stroshine, I love the work that you guys do. Thank you for the interesting podcast, helping me keep informed about the World Cup. May the Lord Jesus bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, John, and may he bless you too. And, Cody Smith, listening to Group G-Pod, love the Belgium song. I'm sure you guys get a lot of people complimenting you on the job you do, but I don't think you can hear it enough. No, we can't. You guys do an awesome job. I love the pod. Let's go, Team USA.
Oh.
And he believes Belgium will bring home the championship.
Whoa. Well, we'll talk more about that on our other World Cup podcast.
No, and I do. Look, I don't read these out to make myself feel better.
No, it's to make me feel better.
Well, partly because you have such low self-esteem. But no, it's just because when people say nice things, it just feels nice to say thank you back. It's the way I was brought up, and thanks.
It is super cool. It still is like beyond me that people listen to this podcast.
Why would you say
that? I don't know.
Like,
it's crazy.
Oh my God. We the Irish and the Jews, we've got no self-esteem.
No.
None.
No. It's we got to go to like some kind of therapy session, something like that.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I'm proud of you and myself. We did a lot of work
these.
You've completely. I really am.
Senses
did a lot of work
dread
on these.
And guilt.
Found all these songs.
That was fun.
In the end, you hated it, but the Brazil one winds up as my winner. My World Cup song winner would be the Attitude 67.
Oh, by the way, my God. So we had a ton of listeners told us about Attitude 67. You know who loves Attitude 67?
Who?
Neymar.
Yeah.
Yeah, Neymar posted a video of himself singing the aforementioned
Oh, how'd you not tell me about this? We would have been playing it.
I'm going to give props to Brad C. for this one. Oh, Brad. Let me just find the tweet.
I feel so validated right now. Thank you, Brad.
Yeah, Brad C, he sent me a video of Neymar singing in it, right? And Florian Froschmeier, who is, he tweeted us this morning, thanks for the tip. Having a party in my car since I heard it for the first time. By the way, I'm Swiss. So Florian is there, and I tweeted back, you're welcome. Just remember to party responsibly in your car whilst listening to Attitude 67 on winding Swiss mountain roads, which I thought was...
I think that song is the winner. You got to get on board. You got to listen to it again. Maybe listen to the whole thing. Really blast it, too, because you can't hear that song and not be happy.
Well, thanks to Brad C. for that, and thanks to Florian from Switzerland, who is a listener in Switzerland.
Good stuff, man. Hey, this was fun. Up next, the World Cup podcast that we did, and then after that, Russia, Saudi Arabia. Here we go, man. To you, I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.